Podcast Studios is the home of Head Stuff Podcasts. It's where lots of our shows are recorded and where we work on production, promotion, video, live shows, and lots more. In our studios here in Dublin City Centre, we work with everyone from international brands to government organisations, charities to arts groups, entrepreneurs to hobbyists. So if you'd like us to help tell your story in a creative, professional and engaging way, you can find out more at thepodcaststudios.ie.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey guys, and welcome to Personality Bingo with me, your host, Tom Moran. So this week on the podcast, we have the brilliant Claire Dunn. Claire is an actor and a writer based between here and London. You might have most recently seen her in The Gate in Look Back in Anger. I was also lucky enough to see her in Tribes at The Gate, which was a beautiful play. Well, moreover, her performance was just so stunning. But the whole thing was great, directed by the brilliant Una Murphy. She's worked with all the best in the business, from Druid to The Abbey to the Lyric Hammersmith to The Young Vic to The Donmar Warehouse. She's kind of done it all, and as well as that, as you're going to hear over the course of this episode, she's a lovely, lovely person who I didn't know that well before the chat, but one of those people that you just feel you know really quickly. As well as that, Claire, as a writer, has done some great work, including Sure Look It, Fuck It, which has been done at Electric Picnic and Body and Soul. Hopefully there's going to be more to come from that as we talk about a little bit in the episode. And as well as that, Claire was awarded development funding for her screenplay, which is currently titled Owned, and we talk about that a little bit on the podcast because Element attached themselves to that project. It went through the hands of Sharon Horgan, so many brilliant, brilliant people, Screen Ireland, all this sort of stuff. You're going to hear about it all over the course of the episode. So guys, without further ado, please enjoy the wonderful Claire Dunn playing Personality Bingo with Tom Moran. Claire Dunn, ready to play Personality Bingo?
I am super ready.
All right, sweet. Well, a quick explanation of how it all works. I've got 60 minutes on the clock. I've got 60 balls in here and 60 corresponding questions. I've also given you 5 numbers on that sheet of paper. Would you do me a favour and read out the 5?
I have 4, right. 8, yeah. 34, okay. 47, yes. And 18.
Nice. Would you do me another favour and pick a 6 number, something between 1 and 60 that's not already there, and scribble it down?
Between 1 and 14.
14. All right, scribble that down. 14. Sweet. Any reason?
There was a period there, like in the last few years, where 14 kept turning up, and it was always either a great day or it was just a good omen. And I don't know why, it just came up like loads of times.
Nice.
And I just started to go, oh, it seems like when the number 14 is around, something good happens. Or like on the 14th of every month, seemed to be always a really cool day, an unexpectedly nice day.
Yeah.
Not anything major, but just like a nice day. So yeah. I was like, I like 14.
It's a good reason. Are you one of these people, like, do you see kind of patterns where you're like, I probably shouldn't be seeing patterns here, but like you look for them? Do you know what I mean?
I can't help it. I think it's because I read this book when I was 18 and it said something about synchronicity, meaning that you're onto something or you're like, you're in good flow basically or something. Mm. It's something to do with like, I guess, yeah, just that. Sorry, I have no other deeper answer than that. That is all I remember, is like synchronicity is a good sign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck it, works for me. And I should say that if your synchronicity is all that's revved up to be at this point, the tables are turned. You get to ask me any question, and okay, I'll answer totally honestly if all 6 years come out. It's never happened before, I should say that, but I don't know. Let's see how synchronicity this is going to be. Right, let's give it a spin. All right, here we go. First out the gate, we have number 38. Do you have it?
I do not.
All right, no worries. Number 38. The question is, do you have any guilty pleasures?
Guilty pleasures. Yeah, at the moment, it's just that new oat milk that everyone's drinking. The barista one. The very specific grey brand like of Oatly, which I am driving people mad about. I'm like, it is better than anything you've ever tasted in a coffee. So yeah, that's my guilty pleasure because it's about £3 a litre and I probably use way too much of it and make lattes constantly.
We were talking off mic there, which is, without context just sounds odd. I guess it was odd. We were both lactose intolerant growing up.
Yeah.
What, like, what was that like?
No, it was fine. I was much later on getting really badly lactose intolerant and intolerant to loads of stuff. And it was so funny because what happened was... I think I was just, oh no, it was in my 20s. It was like, yeah, I was away with Druid and everybody was like, you're starting to look very thin. And then when I came home, I really was like, oh God, yeah, like I'm not keeping weight on my body. And I went for these food allergy tests and just, it was, you need to give up tea and toast and milk for a while. And I was like, all the things I love. And so ever since then, I actually, it was great because then I had loads of energy after I got rid of all those things out of my diet. And then just started getting into eating really different options for that. And it was grand. That's so, such a boring answer. But yeah, there you go.
No, it was a boring question. Like, nobody.
But do you know, I used to work in a health food shop. Yeah. And there was a little kid that was allergic to everything that used to come in. And I used to feel so sorry for her. Because back then it was like the only thing she could get was like licorice as a sweet. And nowadays they just have so many more options for little kids that are sensitive now, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I have a good friend and... it's funny, I was in a band with him growing up and we'd still be mates. Like, our band broke up in probably like 2012, much to the detriment of the Irish music scene, might I add.
Absolutely.
But I realised I'm the only member of the band who's not vegan now, which was a challenging moment for me. I was like, wow. Well, why the fuck am I such a scumbag? Like, why are all these guys so much more, like, I don't know, environmentally and just morally conscious than me. Anyway, but yeah, he's also a celiac, and he got diagnosed, I'd say, when he was like 13 or 14, but he was like really, really small, like noticeably small. And it was because of that, because he's highly sensitive to gluten, and he was eating it for all these years, and it properly stunted his growth to the point where he turned probably like 5 foot, like two or three, do you know what I mean?
The
rest of his family would be, you know, they wouldn't be necessarily huge, but they'd be more close to like the average height, for example.
You know,
it's really interesting how your body just,
I think it's because your body just goes, get everything out of me. it doesn't absorb anything then for a while, because it's like just trying to fight this thing. So yeah, but then once you're onto it, you're onto it. Is that Tiernan we're talking about?
That's Tiernan. not your Tiernan, my Tiernan.
Oh,
you don't know this Tiernan.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe you do, but I highly doubt it. Okay. But you should. He's brilliant. Okay. That's good. It's been okay. All right, here we go. Number 9. Do you have it?
No. Oh God, I have 8. That's
no worries. Number 9, in your industry, who is a person that you would love to work with?
Oh God, I mean, so many.
I know.
Who do I really want to work with? Actually, I've never had the chance to work with Enda Walsh. I just want to like get the chance to be in a rehearsal room with him because of his energy and his personality, and we always have such great chats. And I've never worked officially with Michael Murphy either, and we're really good friends. So just as people that I want to work with in a room, they're definitely people. There's lots of girls I want to work with as well. Anna Shields, who I just saw.
Me too.
In The Fringe, and I barely know her. When I saw her do her show at The Fringe, I was like, oh my God, I want to be in a room with her. I want to improvise. I want to do comedy. I want to do something with that girl. Like, she is just, I love her presence, I love her energy. I think we have some things in common that we could really fire around a room. And I was like, oh yeah. So I had a bit of a grow for her a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, isn't it, when you find like kind of, I don't want to say like kindred spirits or anything like that, but when you find people and you can identify things that like you love about them, or things that you think that, you know, similar energies you might have with them, and then things like, well, I could never do that, and they do that so well, or whatever.
It's
a lovely thing.
Yeah, it can fit like I don't know what you call it, like Jenga or interlocking things, where you know, like they can fill in gaps that you couldn't, or like there's some oppositional stuff that will really work, but then there's some things where you can be like almost like twins, and then that syncs everything together. So, yeah, I just saw her as a person that I could totally buzz off on stage, defo.
And what about then, you know, for you as a writer and like a screenwriter and stuff like that, mm-hmm. do you, when you're writing, do you think, like, do you, does it help you to think of specific people? Like, if you're writing a character, does it help you to think of a specific actor? Even if, like, down the line, that's not who's going to play it, but just even to place things.
Yeah, it can really help, because sometimes I think when you're trying to get your authentic kind of dialogue flowing, sort of thing, and the first year or two that you're doing that is like, it can be quite difficult, because if you're new to writing, you know, like, we're all, like, a lot of actors are kind of, they know what a good line feels like. Mm-hmm. That's our one link into the writing thing, is that you'll know what resonates for you. And I sometimes, yeah, I would use people in my head as touchstones. Like, I definitely had a certain actor in mind for one of my characters in the screenplay that I wrote with Element, and it actually might never be him in the end, but when I think of him and his authentic sort of character and what he gives off, that's the spirit of the character that I'm trying to write, so it kind of just lends itself to what I'm writing. Yeah, so I'd say yeah, using actors as touchstones really is really, really helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How does that, I don't want to go too much into this sort of stuff, but like, how does the Element thing come out? Because that's obviously, by the way, congratulations, that's so cool to have like even that.
We haven't even made it yet.
No,
but
of course.
It came about very interestingly. Like, I instinctively just wanted to write a story, and began my own journey with it a few years ago, and was doing it for nothing, obviously. And then eventually was trying to apply for funding. And what happened was, one of my acting agents asked me, who's your fantasy person that you would love to bring to see you in a show? And I was doing Midsummer Night's Dream and The Lyric. And I was joking. I was like, Sharon Horgan. And they were like, actually, she's in our agency. We can get an invite to her. And I was like, oh, grand. And what happened was, a couple of weeks later, I got an email directly from her. And she just said, oh, I'm so sorry, I can't make your show because I'm working in New York. And she was making Divorce at the time. Mm. And I was just basically buzzing because Sharon Horgan emailed me. I mean, I literally was like, day made, like, whatever, it doesn't matter. And what happened was, I had been working on a new draft just by myself anyway with my script. To apply for the IFB Screenplay Development Fund all on my own. And I had no kind of links there at all. I think I'd finally gotten a cup of coffee with Rory Gilmartin, who was still there at the time. So what happened was, this is going to be really long-winded now. Well, basically, I had her email address, and I was sitting there one night, like, in rehearsals then in Midsummer Night's Dream, and I just remember going, like, well, Sharon has a company and they're developing scripts and stuff. I mean, I could just send her my script and say, like, could you add this to your pile of unsolicited scripts? And I'm trying to get some funding for it, but you're like, no hassle. Like, it was really like, if I can just submit it. So I sent off this email, and so I sent it off at, like, say, 11 o'clock at night. What I woke up to in the morning is like the dream email that you would get as a first time writer of a screenplay. Like, it literally was an email from Sharon at first going, hey Claire, well, as you know, I'm kind of working on the set here with the Divorce series, and I'm up to my eyes, but I'll try and get to it in a few months time, or get somebody in the office to look at it. And I was like, oh, it looks like there's a second email underneath it. I was like, that's weird. And I scrolled down, because I was like, what's my email doing? And I scrolled down, it said, forget my last email. I clicked on it, I started reading, and I didn't stop until the end. And I was like, I think I'm going to frame this. I think we're going to frame this email. And she said, when can you talk? And then, so she rang me from her, like, car in New York, and there was a difference in time change or whatever. And she was just like, what's going on with this? And is there anyone interested? And it was really like, so she got on to Rory and the scream. I think she rang Rory and IFB and was just checking, like, I hope Claire's in with a chance to get that funding, because it's a really good script and I think we'd be really interested in helping it go along. And so, and Rory was like, actually, good news, she was already getting it anyway. So that was the beginning of me becoming a writer. And then, so I worked on it that year for a good 5 or 6 months. And then, so I moved back. That's when I started, like, being a lot more in Dublin, because it's a really Dublin-based story. I came back, I rented an office. Liam Ryan gave me a lovely cheap office in the Dublin Theatre Festival office that summer. I was just, I literally was living the dream, because I had just a few grand to pay the rent. and get an office and just pay for food and coffee. And I literally did so many research meetings and storyboards and learned how to write and just like kept writing and trying to hear the characters in my head and all that kind of, like all of that stuff that you want as a writer, which is time and freedom and just a bit of money to survive. You don't need that much, like. And then basically then in the autumn, the director I was working with at the time, called Phyllida Lloyd, in a theatre show, she said, "I heard you're still writing that script and all. Can I have a read of that?" And blah, blah, blah. And I said, "Oh, yeah, yeah, sure." Like, but I was never thinking of asking her to direct, because she's like quite a big deal and does a lot of big theatre and West End stuff, and also has directed like major films like Mamma Mia and The Iron Lady, nothing like small. Right. And so I never was going to, I was thinking I was going to get like a cool like indie director in Ireland to do it or something, whatever. And then what happened was very funny, because she just texted me one day just going, "I want to direct your film." And I was like, right. So I told Sharon that. And then Sharon was like, "Well, that's really good." She was like, "Well, because we really want to move forward with this. Now you've submitted your finished draft." Like, it was all finished with the development. And she just goes, "Who's your dream company to work with?" And I was like, "And the guys that made Room, Element." I was like, "They're amazing. Like, and I just love the way they work." And within a few days, the script had gotten to Ed Guiney. He rang Sharon, and then I was at their Christmas party in London. Me, Phyllida, Sharon were sitting across from Ed. And then who had gone to join and work Element? Rory Gilmartin. So Rory walks over to the table and he'd left Irish Film Board. And then literally he was like, it was like he brought my project through the Irish Film Board, and then he became the person that was on it in Element. So the synchronicity, as I said, was very good, and it was also not very forced. Like, it all sort of happened in a very, there was a bit of me being opportunistic and sending Sharon a script, but that was after me working on my own on a script for a year and a half and putting my own money into something. Like, that wasn't like me being like forceful or in you know, there's some people kind of just hustle, but they might not actually have stuff to back it up. Like, I was afraid of ever sending anything. And then that opportunity came, and it was just one moment I went, actually, I have this screenplay, so I'm going to send it. So now I look back on it and I go, that was one of those good moments of opportunism rather than forcing anything. I thought that was quite cool and interesting. So yeah, so that's how I got in with Element.
That's an amazing
since
story.
Then, yeah, so since then it's just been a year of more development stuff with the help of them and script editors and support. And now we're going into the phase of like casting and going into pre-production and stuff. And it's, yeah, so we're hoping to shoot in April and May next year. That's the plan.
It's amazing.
There's the long, long story. Is that like a really, really long answer? I'm so sorry, everyone that's listening.
But no, but it's really worthwhile, because it's, yeah, like, I mean, yeah, that's huge. And I think what's it's so funny that you brought that Sharon was such a part of that, because since she's not someone that I know, but it was just before you came in, myself and Paddy were talking about her, because I was just asking somebody seen Catastrophe, because I think we were saying Alison Spittle, who does a podcast here, did a live episode with Sharon recently, and I was just saying how I just downloaded it this morning, I need to finish it, because I think, I don't know if you ever do this, sometimes I like, I don't know why I do this, but I like think of different people whose careers I really like admire, and like hers is probably top of the list in terms of like, is in Catastrophe for me, because I do screenwrite as well, that's kind of like my, I'd say, on par passion with acting, and like Catastrophe as a thing is just like mind-blowing to me.
Tell me about it, like so honest.
Oh my god, it's just phenomenal and so funny, and so like is in the end of the last season. I'm just so excited for the, so like, yeah, but her as a person, there's just, I don't know, even if you hear her interviewed, like there's just something so compelling, and like there's a kindness about her, but like a real straightness or honesty about her. Like, she just seems like a gem.
She's so grounded. I remember meeting her at one point in the office in her place in London, and I remember being struck by how just calm she is, and very like just not she wouldn't be pushing things, and in fact she's very, when I spoke to her a few weeks ago, I met her recently, and she was checking in on how I am as the writer, because she knows what it takes to write something, and she was just kind of going like, how are you feeling, like it's been through so many drafts now, and where are you at? And she's very protective of that very first draft she ever read, and she still looks back to it and says, like, as long as we retain that like lovely gutsy place that came for in your heart and your instinct, and that you feel okay, then like, yeah, we just keep going that way. But like, so she's never, she's not a pushy producer-y kind of person. She's not trying to, you know what I mean? Like, if anything, she's trying to help you find your voice and help it blossom and just bring it up and bring it forward. So she's just so generous. Like, I just think because she's a person that has built up such a body of work and made it all happen herself, but not in a real, like, I don't know, harsh way, if you know what I mean, that she just knows... She just knows too well the ins and outs of what it is. And she also knows that like it's a daily thing. Like when you're on a set or you're in an editing room or you're writing in your office, whatever it is, it's your daily creative life. Like, and she I think she just gets that. She gets that we're all in it, not just for the end goal or like the perfect edited episode. It's that like every single bit along the journey matters. And I think because she's that wise that you feel that off her when you're working with her and you totally soak it up like a sponge. So, yeah.
And so what's your relationship to writing at the moment?
At the moment, it's funny. I feel like I'm in a bit of a break because, well, I did a lot of more research stuff in the last few months because my film is a little bit zeitgeisty. So I found myself talking to a lot of lawyers actually for some reason and going to lots of stuff. Like, I feel like my, like, so even though sometimes I might not be writing, I'll be doing something in conjunction with it all the time. Like, even last week I did a week of a self-building timber frame kind of house thing in Centre of Alternative Technology with the director of my film, Phillida. And it's because the film is about somebody building their own house. So we went and literally we're learning how to physically build in this amazing place in Wales. And so even though I wasn't writing, I count that as like that's part of what I'm doing. Like that's part of my research, is part of what I'm learning about the whole story that I'm trying to write. And so yeah, so my relationship to writing isn't like that I have a deadline right now. It's that I'm sort of in this in-betweeny phase. I know I'm about to probably do another draft on a show that I'm going to find out soon if I'm definitely funded for it, which is Sure Look at Fuck It, this thing that I got in development with This Is Pop Baby. And so I did write another draft of that in July, and I'll probably have to write another draft before Christmas. So yeah, I have a few things that are sort of like stewing there, but actually at the moment I feel like I'm opening myself up to other ideas. So I have this, my relationship to new writing right now is a file on my computer called Bullshit and Brainstorms. It's just a few pages of me just thinking up ideas and seeing if anything's coming to me, but I'm not forcing it because I've got a kind of got enough going on. You know, I kind of want to just definitely make sure my film gets made first. That's my main thing. And yeah, I don't know. I sang a few of my own songs recently in The Fringe, and that was like another little mini goal. So I was like, well, that's another thing to do as well. I don't know.
Okay, I didn't know you do that. So let me ask you this. What's like, what's your relationship then to your own creativity? Maybe that's a better question, just in the sense of, so you obviously do a lot of different things and have a lot of different interests in that sense.
Yeah, but I haven't produced any. Like, I haven't like gone out and actually recorded anything, or, you know, I think I have this thing where I just like making stuff. Like, I don't, like, it's so weird. Like, and the happiest I ever am is with a bunch of people in a room making something together. It's like,
which isn't the experience of writing a film though, right?
Well, it's not. Like, there's a lot of, like, there's obviously a lot of things that you do along the way, like research stuff and meetings and stuff. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff on your own. So I kind of miss the more collaborative work.
Yeah.
And so that's why I loved when I was doing Sure Look at Fuck It. I wrote that a lot just to kind of, that had a better, that was an easier aim because I knew I was going to be saying it all to an audience. So it was literally about making people laugh and have the crack and like entertain. So that was a bit easier to write, but I do sort of miss the collaborative stuff. Like, I want to get more into like writing with other people and and just doing more like comedy and light stuff. And my relationship to creativity is basically like, if I can do things that I like singing, yeah, acting, rehearsing something with a cool bunch of people, making a short film, whatever it is. If I can do that and somehow live off it, I'm happy. Yeah. I'm really, really happy. I wish I had a better answer for
that's
you.
That's a great answer. I know, right? Let's give it a spin. All right, here we go. Number 18. Do you have it?
Oh my God, I do.
You do. Nice one.
Yes.
All right, sweet. Number 18. Okay, are there any things you do to stay healthy day to day? I have like some little prompts written down, if that's helpful for you. Like meditation, mindfulness, exercise, therapy, anything like that that you...
Yeah, I mean, exercise is a big one for me. Well, it's not big. It's just that even if I only do like 15 minutes of some sort of like YouTube yoga, it's just something... Mm-hmm. To get me into my body usually is helpful. Yeah. And then recently I've just been introduced to Pilates and I'm like, I'm going to get on that because that's quite, that is actually quite mindful. Like you have to be really present to do it really well. And I like that idea. I sort of miss dancing. I used to do a lot of dancing when I was younger, more for fun. I did like a module in it, but I didn't really pursue it. But I ended up getting quite skilled at tap dancing at one point, which was hilarious, and then chucked them out the window. But I sort of love I have a weird addiction to like running, but it's not like it's for the pleasure of running. Like I'm a crap runner. Like I love just getting out there in the fresh air and just feeling. Like I went for a run yesterday and it wasn't even to get fit. Like it was just like, oh great, I can run around Marley Park, lovely. Like it's like I just love. Yeah, and I love like hill walking or being out like in, like I'm such a hippie, like, but I do love going for long walks and stuff. Yeah, and then for every day, so meditation, yeah. I mean, sometimes I'm good at it, sometimes I'm crap at it. Like I was trying to do meditation actually last night and I felt like, oh, my mind was just definitely not able to relax. But apparently the thing is just to let thoughts happen or something and then they eventually stop. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm that good at it. I was good at it a few years ago.
Yeah.
It comes and goes.
Do you have like, are you real ritualistic in terms of your writing? Like, do you have certain things that need to be in place?
Certain things. Basically, I love when I'm in a place of like, I actually have this thing of like, I know it's in city, but like when I'm really nice to myself, I write better. So sometimes I would do a weird thing. Like if I'm not feeling the buzz when I first wake up, I will go and eat like cake and coffee for breakfast and like just be really stupid and like do something really childish or like just go off to Dunleary or something and walk the pier and get an ice cream and then sit down to write because I feel like I need to fill myself with something that's like a nice experience and then begin.
Yeah.
Because I think like I don't know, I don't like, you know, I know sometimes you can write because you're emotional about something as well and that's fine as well. And then if you're angry about something or passionate about something or blah, blah, blah. But sometimes at me, I just have to go for a walk and sit down real calm and just let thoughts flow until something starts coming. Sometimes it's just I don't write for a while and I just walk around and then things come to me and I jot things into my notes on my iPhone.
Uh-huh.
And like that's a lot of my spoken word stuff. Like just decent rhymes or weird playing on words or weird phrases, they come to me when I'm just walking around like doing nothing or just walking to meet someone or chatting to someone or I'll think of something and I'll just note it in my iPhone and that is writing. Like as far as I'm concerned, I'm like, that's a good idea. I'll just note that down. It'll fit in somewhere and you'd be surprised at the amount of stuff that you think is random will sync up somehow inside of something like. So yeah, I count all of that.
Yeah, it's weird that like even what you were saying about the exercise thing, like that's something because I like to run as well. And if I'm buzzing around the place, because it's one of the things I think I should probably do less, but I really enjoy, for example, listening to podcasts, like other people's podcasts.
Oh yeah,
it's a huge thing for me. But sometimes I worry about the fact that like if I'm walking anywhere or if I'm doing the dishes or if I'm pretty much doing anything where I'm not with other people, I'll pop my headphones in and I'll go into that world. And sometimes I just worry that I'm not in my own weird subconscious thoughts enough because I'm thinking about these other conversations. Yeah. So like when I'm running, that's the one time when I force myself. I'll put in like music even, but just not to have like other people's conversations rustling around in your head.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what will pop up in
times. Totally. And it can be just one thing or it can be like a whole flow of ideas that are linking up together and you're like, oh, and then like I have to stop running and then type them all into my phone like real quick, or I'll do a quick voice memo. The funniest thing is when I'm out I've been out cycling and heard a song in my head and I've had to pull over and just sing it into my voice memo on the side of the street. I've done that.
Wow.
I've been in the shower and a song has dropped into my head or the phrase of a song. I remember when I got the one, I caught a song in my head when I was out running and I was listening to loads of stuff, like music. I was in London, I was doing a job in Lyric Hammersmith and I was out for a run before the show and I ran in to have a shower in the dressing room. And I was in the shower and I just heard this phrase and so, and I had to hop out shower naked and find my phone. Like nobody was in there. I was in. I was like, you know, and I never knew, and I remember it was a bit that I used then, and sure, look at fuck it.
Really?
Like, and it, like that was, I didn't know what that was ever going to be.
And what was the time gap in between?
So I must have thought, when was it in Midsummer's? That was like autumn 2016. And then when did I do Sure Look at Fuck It finally in public? Probably 2017 in Electric Picnic or something, or in Body and Soul. But right. It was only a, like, you know what I mean? But I'm saying, like, these things, they seem random, and then they can be really useful for something to insert in a thing that you're doing. And so lately I've just like not worried about where things are going to go. And if you have material, just if you have material that you're writing and that you actually just know is decent on some level, you don't know what it's for, just keep it. Like, just have a little folder on your computer and just keep it, and then you'll find it. And even just like, just label it something of like what the context of it is or what the topic might be. And then you'll find something like 2 years down the line, you'll go, oh my God, I have the perfect thing for that. Or that's actually just something somebody says in a scene. Like, it's really weird. Like, it all can just join up together. So that's what I think is a good piece of advice. Oh, you know what you were saying about the mindfulness thing or something, or everyday thing?
Mm.
I just realised that I am a massive fan of Blind Boy. And recently he's been doing a load of stuff on the CBT thing.
Yeah.
And I would say that since I was like, instinctively since I was a teenager, I think I've always been doing a bit of CBT. I just didn't realise that was my writing. And then somebody told me about the, what is it, the artist's way or something, where you write morning pages.
Yeah.
For a long time, I did a religious 3 pages every morning where I just write a flow of thought. And I used to find that really helped me clear my head for the day and have a kind of clear head space. Sorry, just to answer the original question that you started with.
No, that's all right. You know it.
But so massive fan of that, which is like your own kind of version of CBT, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. So like... And have you ever done like the traditional like CBT, like talk therapy?
Yeah, I only went to somebody for the first time for that. I think it was like last year, because I was going through a stage of like somebody had died, and I was just going through a really grief stricken stage, and I was like, maybe I just need help with my thoughts, like just to kind of get there. And I'd looked it up and I went and tried it, and it was great. It's very practical. It's very it's a really practical, helpful tool. And then recently when I was listening to Blind Boy, I was like, oh yeah, like that's, yeah, he kind of sums it up very well in the last 3 episodes he did.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's really, it's really helpful, because it just helps you rationalize and realize the difference between thoughts that are kind of toxic and thoughts that are actually positive, mm-hmm. and like feelings that are not your reality, and then feelings that are just because you're human. Or something like that.
Yeah.
He just divides it up very simply. And I think that's all very empowering for people, because some people can't afford therapy, and it's not very widely available on a free basis. And I think like anything like that that's very empowering for the individual is really important.
Yeah.
I've gone off on one there. There
no,
you go.
That's all right. Do you know what's really interesting for me recently? I, like, in the last month or 6 weeks, I've gone back playing football, like competitively with like a team, you know, like on a Saturday, which is something that I would have done growing up. And then I went to drama school and it wasn't really an option. And then, you know, been working for the last, since drama school, like, you know, whatever, so that's 3 years. So it's been about like 6-7 years since I played like competitive football. And at the moment, I have time to go back and play. So I've just started going back and playing with a bunch of lads, which is great. And it's really fun. But at the same time, it's brought back this weird anxiety within me, because when I used to play with lads, like, we had a particularly aggressive team. Like, they were a bunch of 17, 18-year-old lads, and they'd all, loads of hormones, testosterone. They'd be shouting at each other. They'd be calling each other terrible names. They'd be abusing each other. Like, you know, and I was probably... I would certainly be more confident than I am now than I was then. But it's brought back like that. I still have a bit of, I don't know, even like coming up to a game, I'll get like nervous about it because of that.
Yeah.
It's fascinating how, and I was just thinking about how, like, I would be a good amateur footballer. I would not be anywhere near good enough to play professional football, but a good, and I have none of them feelings though in terms of like, acting or writing, really. You know, I won't really get, I'll get nervous before an audition, sure, performance, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't get like anxious, or I'm not afraid of it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I enjoy it, and I love the challenge of it, and I love all that. So it was really interesting just getting brought back into that, like, that version of yourself from like 7 years ago. I think what maybe it was because one of the episodes I was listening to, Blind Boys, I'm a little bit behind, but he was talking about how like your various states of, like, you know, your child state and your adults.
Yeah.
It was really interesting. Yeah. I don't know, it just it looped in really, really nicely. It's just
when
funny.
Yeah, when you're either, what, it was that the one where he talks about, you're either playing your child self, one of your parents or you're playing your actual adult self, which is the one you're aiming for. That was a good way as well of summing it up. Yeah, he's just genius at summing it all up very well, because he's somebody that has actually studied psychotherapy and stuff like that. So it's great to just, that's why podcasts are so helpful, I think, as well, for people. It's just a great resource.
Yeah, no, it's good. Right.
So keep going.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Let's give it a spin. All right, here we go. Number 53. Do you have it?
I don't.
No worries.
Oh, God.
Number 53. Okay, in terms of like film, theatre, music, comedy, concerts, art galleries, anything you want, what's the greatest piece of like art that you've witnessed?
Whoa, that is like a really big question.
It is.
Wow. I don't know if I can bloody do this. Let me think.
Moments are totally cool. Like any things that are popping to...
Well... I don't know, like, can it count as like when you just see somebody that really inspires you in a moment when you were younger? Because basically I'm thinking of the time that I was in drama school. For some reason this is coming to me.
Yeah.
I was saying to everybody, I'm going to go see this guy, Tim Minchin. He's on, and, you know, it was when I was studying in Cardiff. And people were like, oh no, it's Monday and I don't go. And I was like, guys, like, you should check him out. Like, he's really good. Like, you should just look at some of his YouTube videos. And so I went to see him, and the venue held about 400 seats. I said it only had about 40 people in it.
Yeah.
And he did an amazing show, and he jumped off the stage and he gave me a big hug. Like, we were all standing and clapping at the end, but he chose me to give me a hug, and I was like, come to Dublin, and all this like in his ear. And he was like, what? I was like, please come to Dublin. Anyway, so I was like, wow, I love that guy. And then what happened to him in the following like 8 or 9 years was unreal. And I remember thinking, wow, like I had an instinct that guy was really talented, and I just loved watching him and blah, 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 and just was watching him on a kind of fringe theatre level. And then just to watch what he did with his music and comedy, and how he like comments on things about politics, and then ended up writing the Matilda musical, and then he's written another musical since, and now he's doing live shows, but he's got a massive influence now in the world. And he just, I don't know, just somebody like that just really inspires me, because they're kind of unlimited in their ideas of what they can do. I think he's a great artist. In terms of great pieces of art, though, I mean, I don't know, there's just too many to name.
But
it is
really interesting when you think about someone like Tim Minchin, because you know, as you said, we all know him as like kind of stratospheric. Like, I think he does stadiums now, probably. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah,
he's written all these he's a superstar. In terms of comedy and writing, I know he's so much more than that, but he's a literal superstar. And you do, when you don't have that context, like, he obviously has the context of his own life, but we don't have that context of 40 people and a shitty night in Cardiff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and it's so interesting to, when you think, because, I mean, I don't know how old Tim Minchin is, but I imagine he didn't really break in that way till his mid-30s.
Yeah, yeah. It's fascinating, because you can see it's somebody who built up a lot of skills in themselves and, like, was playing piano from a young age, probably, but his ability to just play with all, like, and also that it's all really fun and open. I don't know, I just found it very inspiring. But one of the most, one of the most effective, okay, so I have this weird thing, like, if you're talking in terms of, like, pieces of art that really affect me, or, like, I have this weird thing where stand-up comedians just have a huge effect. Like, I could listen to stand-up comedy forever. Like, absolutely, in the background of my life, I could put on stand-up comedy. I haven't done it now in a few weeks. I've been trying to purge myself for a while so I can go back in.
Yeah.
And recently, I watched Chris Rock's most recent thing on Netflix, and then Nanette in the same few days. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so satisfied. I just love the way some stand-up comedians do this thing where they have this radical honesty. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's so cool. It's so refreshing because you just need a bit of that in today's world, especially when there's just so much kind of like there's just so much you can look at online, or there's all like news constantly or whatever. And politicians, the way they go on, and there's like the sense of feeling that there's nobody that's sincere. Like, it's just like, so I just love people that get to be really radically honest. And then to top off that with another answer to the best piece of art I've read recently, it was Lynn Rowan's book. I just finished that a few days ago and it was like, yeah, she is just the bomb.
Okay. What's it called?
She is People Like Me.
Okay. It's a good name.
Yeah. She's really, really, she is an amazing woman. And I, yeah. Anyone that's listening, read that book.
It's funny that you mentioned stand-up comedy, because I think I don't know if I had a dream about this or was I thinking about it really late last night, but I was thinking about it in the context of the podcast. I was like, I don't think this would actually be a good question, but maybe I can ask you now. Like, if you could, because again, talking about Tim Minchin, this actually rounds off nicely, and because I love stand-up comedy as well. Mm. And I love a lot of the podcasts I listen to are done by comedians. I think because of that radical honesty, like, I'm like, I'll listen to that all day. That is fascinating to me. And they just seem to all come to play ball. You know what I mean? Like they don't have anything to hide, which I love. So I was thinking about if you could. Here's a non on the sheet question for you. If you could be a stand up comedian and be really good, be like Chris Rock level good, without all the struggle that like Chris Rock or Tim Minchin, all these guys. Could you forget about that? Like all these guys probably, I don't know, like, but a lot of the ones that I would listen to, certainly like they talk about like you need to do your 10 years. You know, there's that whole 10,000 hours theory, but like in comedy, I think it's like kind of 10 years till you get really good. And you would kind of see that like a lot of the comedians, like even, like they're many in their like 30s, 40s, 50s, you know what I mean? Even someone like Aisling Bea, who's amazing, but she was probably like chugging away for like 7, 8, 9 years before she really broke it. Now she's a superstar and she's amazing and it's so deserved. But like, so if you could do that and like hit that level with none of the work, or if you could like kind of keep chugging away in the way you are, like with all the different stuff with the songs, with the poetry, with the, like what would you do? Like, because I was just thinking, for me, stand up, like it actually would tick, I've done some stand up and it ticks a lot of the boxes. Like it's really good. The only thing I didn't like about it, and I think this is the difference between being like me doing open mics versus Chris Rock, who's a superstar, is like Chris Rock doesn't have to be funny all the time. If he wants to say something, he can say it. Whereas if you're doing open mics, you have like 5 minutes to be funny. You kind of have to be funny every 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Or else you're not, you feel like you're not doing it right. And now maybe that's a sign that like I wasn't very good at it. I'm not sure. But it's an interesting thing. Where have you ever tried it, or like where do you sit with it?
What's the question? You want to see if I don't know. I think stand up?
I abandoned the question halfway through. Like, is it something that you have done or would do?
I think people have asked me to consider trying it, and I was like when I did Sherlock Fuck out, I went, I think I have found a vehicle to be funny in. And I think like maybe that's going to be my way in, but I haven't had the courage to stand there and just do some stand-up comedy because I'm not sure I'm a person that can stand there and just make observations and be funny. Maybe I could be, but the reason I know that about myself is because my own sister, Sarah Dunn, is the funniest person ever, telling a story, just telling you a straight story and making observations about stuff, and is so radically honest that I've gone... But she, like, I've seen the glory of somebody being naturally just I could put her on a stage if she was willing and like could, like I would just stick her on a stage because I'm doing all the other things. I'm doing the acting and the singing and the spoken word, and I'm writing screenplays and doing that, this, that and the other. I think it would be by accident that I would end up in a stand-up comedian moment. Like it would be by accident. I'd be being interviewed and then something might come out, but I don't think, and as you can tell by this, I haven't even said I'm that funny, so like it's not natural to me, but yet I find it the most satisfying art form to watch and behold. So maybe it's just something that I will someday reach for. I don't know if I could do it tomorrow. I really don't know.
I didn't see Sherlock and Fuck It. Is it a one woman show?
Kind of. My cousin does some guitar in it with me, and we kind of do a bit of improv back and forth. And I found that there was moments, I've only done a work in progress with it, but yeah, I had a lot of moments that went askew. And it was then I realised, yeah, I'm good at improvising within a structure. I don't know if I could just start banging out stuff.
Yeah, in terms of having done a little bit of it, and it isn't much, I'd say, like between 10 and 15 gigs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But like, I think it is one of the best things that I ever did, just for general... For general performance, for writing.
Oh, you inspire me now.
You know, you should. You should. Like, I really think you should. Because, first of all, I bet my house you'd be brilliant on it. You know
Thanks.
What I mean? Like, I don't have the house. That's why I'll bet it. But, like, you know, you'd be brilliant at it, of course. But it's so good and it's terrifying, which is nearly a good enough reason to do it in and of itself.
Yeah. Why not go into the fire of fear and just do it?
Like, the first one is terrible because you and it's one of them art forms as well where you can't really, in fact, no, you can't get feedback on it. It's not like you could send Chris Rock your joke and say, is that funny? Like, it wouldn't work because it would have to, you know, the way you can send a screenplay to Sharon Horgan and she could be like, wow, that was so compelling, I didn't put it down. You can't do that with jokes. The only way to do that is get up in front of someone or really a crowd of people and tell them, and like, you will find out
it
very quickly.
Instant, like, it's instant. Just, you know whether they're laughing or not. I know.
And that's why, like, there's one gig in particular that I did and it went so well, like so well. And just the buzz of it was unbelievable.
Wow.
Like, I don't know. Yeah, I, because I know, like, in terms of what, because me and you are similar in a sense of, like, writers and actors and stuff, like, that's what comedians are as well, except they're also, like, the editor and the director, and because, like, they literally are, every night listening to it, being like, oh, that didn't really work, I'll take it out.
Yeah.
But, you know,
it's a holistic art form in itself, and the one person. It's just them and the audience, like, and it's really, and yet, the more I watch some of them, I realise it's, like, the less effort as such that they're making to laugh. It's almost like some of them just stand there and they just say things a certain way, observing life, and it's actually through who they are and them being in the moment, observing what's going on in a very ironic or funny way. It's just, I don't know, that's what makes them funny, and you go, wow, I wish I could do that, because actually they make it look simple, but I reckon it's taken them like 5 pages to get that one observation or you know, whatever it is, phrase going.
Yeah.
And you go, wow, like Dylan Moran, come on. The guy is like, the phrases he comes up with that observe life. I was like, there's no chance he gets that immediately.
No.
Like,
no,
you, like, you work towards that. It's poetry. It's actual poetry.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that I really love about Twitter. At the moment, I'm a big Twitter buzz. I love it.
Good.
And I love just that, like, crafting the 280 characters and like literally trying to chip away at it. Like, I have that with them because you were talking about your notes section earlier. I have that. I'm like, if someone found my notes section on my iPhone, they would arrest me. Do you know what I mean?
Me too.
Like, just or put me in a insane asylum, and rightly so. Whereas like my Twitter is like, I have like the draft section of it, like, I don't leave nothing in there for long, but I always like put it in there for like, you know, a few minutes and come back to be like, can I shave a little bit more off this? I find it so it's like you know, it's like your first draft versus your eighth draft, you know what I mean? You're just like chipping away at anything that's like a little bit boring, a little bit not working. It's so it's so fun.
So do you use Twitter to try and say funny things on it, or just like,
yeah, I guess I do. Yeah, I think I use Twitter as like like, recently I was away interrailing, just finished a gig and literally booked a last minute, like, finished a gig on a Sunday, booked a ticket on a Monday and left on a Tuesday kind of thing.
Nice.
And did some interrailing because it was something I always wanted to do, and I was like, if I don't do it now, I'm not going to do it.
Mm.
And I really want to. So, and I kind of was like, you know, tweeting that. But it was interesting what you were saying about what you admire in comedians is that, like, ability to be honest and stuff. Because, like, of late, I've kind of gotten into a little like style of tweeting. I do not want to talk about this with any like grandiose notions. It's literally just me typing into my phone.
I must follow you now.
No,
where's my phone?
No, but it's just little small things, but I really enjoy it and it's funny.
Yeah.
And but they've started like getting more like traction and stuff, which is interesting.
Great.
But the reason that it is, I think the reason that it is because I'll just tweet the worst things that happen to me in a day. Like, you just your little mini like failures that are kind of funny, and you know, I might heighten them a little bit, but it's like people really get a kick out of that because like I think we shame ourselves so much when stuff like that happens. And I mean, I think that's like where when I'm writing best, that's where it's coming from. It's always
when you're just so honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just like, no, oh, I did this. And I, oh God, I don't know. Actually, my favorite thing in life is when I give up knowing or trying to figure it out. Like the last week or two has been so funny because I was just last week working with a bunch of new people and I learned how to use about, I don't know, 10 different fucking tools I'd never used on a building site. And I was doing all this great stuff. And you just had to get in there and work with people and talk with all sorts of different heads. And there was something about the relief of constantly not knowing what I'm doing and having to, in the moment, go, okay, that's how you saw. Okay, cool. I'm going to saw this wood as far as I know. I know how to get to that line. And then somebody showed me how to level something off and how to chip away at some, and you're only learning what's in the moment. You can't do anything else.
Yeah.
And I was reminded of that great Alan Watts thing where he's like, he says this is this cool philosopher that you can find on YouTube from like the 60s or 70s who never knew he was going to be recorded and then broadcast in the 21st century. But anyway, he's very cool because he's one of those kind of guru people, or he worked with lots of, I don't know, I think he must have done lots of stuff with like Eastern philosophy. And yeah. He said the moment when you really admit that you don't know, that's when you're free. Like that's when you know. Weirdly, it's like it's the opposite of it. It's the yin yang thing. It's like when you really don't, when you give up knowing everything, that's when you're free. You just go, I don't know. And that's when your head's open as well. And that's when you get ideas.
Yeah.
It's weird. Like it's a weird thing. It's like you're in open space and so then something drops into it. So I can't really explain that. It's not making much sense. But I think that's why we love stand-up comedians, because they have this thing where they stand there, or like you're saying with your Twitter thing, is when people just go, I actually just don't know. I woke up this morning and I knew I had this deadline to have this idea in to these people or whatever it might be. And I just didn't have anything. I didn't have anything. So I just had to go for a walk and, you know, blah, 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 scratch my head. Or like the other day, I missed my flight by moments because there was a big crash on the motorway before Gatwick. Mm-hmm. And I was stuck on a bus beside Gatwick looking at it for an hour. And it was so frustrating. And what happened was I had to pay £100 to get on the next flight. And it was just like annoying. And I was like, obviously, like none of us make shitloads of money in this game. And £100, you're like, oh, damn, but it's not the end of the world. I guess I'll get over it. I'll make it up somehow. But that afternoon, then I was, you know, I went through security and da da da. And I went to go to Pret and get a coffee. And your one gave me a free coffee because the Pret staff are allowed to give away free coffee a day or something, I think. But the amount of times I've gone to Gatwick, for some reason, Gatwick Pret staff, they love me. I don't know. I must have a poor me face. I don't know what's going on. But they, like, she gave me a free coffee and it genuinely brightened up my day so much. And I tweeted, like, thanks, Pret, for my free coffee. I was like, because I actually had to pay £100 for a new flight. That Twitter, like, that tweet, I never tweet. Yeah. That tweet got, like, loads of likes and retweets. But like anything that I go like tweeting something really specific about like somebody's work that I like, or, you know, something that I've really thought through and da da da, doesn't get anything. And then when you're just saying something that's really humane and like, oh, thanks for that coffee. Fucking loads of,
I'm telling you,
loads of likes. Yeah. So I completely agree with you. I just think there's something about that humane experience, that daily thing of like, oh, I had such a crap moment there and then this happened.
Yeah.
People like that.
People do like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, you're like, right, like, listen, like, yeah, like, the world is like hard enough at the moment. So, like, yeah, you know, if someone gives you a free coffee and Pret, yeah, fuck it. It's nice to actually, you know, just tweet Pret and be like, yeah, thanks for your staff for being sound. It actually did make a little microscopic difference.
I say all this now and I'll probably give up Twitter like next week now that I've said that or something stupid.
Yeah. No, I know.
I just like it for just, I don't know, seeing other people do their thing and keeping up with what everyone's doing in Dublin. That's actually mainly what I do.
Yeah, no, it's nice.
I just look at it for articles, but yeah, there you go. Right, is that enough to?
Yeah, that's loads.
Loads.
Right, here we go. Number 44. Do you have it?
No, I have 47.
No worries. Okay. Number 44. What's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Best piece of advice I've ever received. Okay, that's interesting. For like anything, like just for life. Like,
yeah.
Best piece of advice.
It could be career if you want, but life's great.
Mm.
The weird thing about them is they normally go hand in hand, you know?
Yeah.
Like good career advice is often good life advice and vice versa.
I always loved that video that Patti Smith that I saw a few years ago. And she said, build a good name. And I thought, what? At first. And then she just talked about how being an artist or being any sort of person in this world is like, it's just your daily thing of keeping on going, and that like not everyone will become Lady Gaga, you know, or, you know, but at the same time, everybody deserves like whatever, like getting successful isn't a sellout thing, by the way, either. She's like making a whole thing of like, you know, there's no such thing as being a sellout. Just build your name and find your voice and look after yourself, she said as well. A real healthy thing of just, you know, don't drink too much. Don't overdo things, but like have fun. So I loved her thing of build a good name. I'm trying to think if there's something that I always, there was something that I had on a bloody post-it for ages and I'm trying to remember what it is.
If you want to take a moment, I got really good advice today from a priest.
Oh, go on.
Yeah, it was good. My granny passed away a month ago, so the month's mind
Sorry
mass.
Sorry to hear that.
Thank you. The month's mind mass was this Sunday. So, and this priest is the most amazing man. Like, if I actually had a dream podcast guest, it would be him. He is incredible. His name is Father Danjo. Okay, he's amazing. He wears like he's a Franciscan monk or a friar, I'm not sure, but he wears like the robes all the time, and he wears sandals and, you know, all the time, like all year round. He's literally the most incredible man. But he gave this great advice in the middle of the mass. He said, when I was in school, one of my teachers said this to me, and I've never forgot it. And he said, it's three things not to do in life. And he's like, don't get discouraged, don't get disappointed, and don't get offended. And like, I don't know, whatever reason, that just really resonated with me.
Okay, you've now reminded me of the thing I'm going to say.
There you go. It's Father Danjo for you.
That's amazing that he said that, though.
Yeah, I just thought it was, I think... Like, then I kind of remodeled it, because I was thinking about it when I went home. I was like, that is fucking gorgeous. And I was like, you know, they're all okay feelings to feel in a moment, and then just check yourself and like let it go and be like, yeah, like that. I was upset about that for a sec, because it's natural to be disappointed about, of course it is, but then just let it go. It's okay. Don't get discouraged.
Absolutely.
Don't get offended. It was just lovely.
There's been a real recent thing. There's a few people I've been talking to recently that become a little bit obsessed with this thing of reconciling yourself with your own mortality. Sorry, I'm just laughing to myself now, because if they ever hear this, they'll piss themselves laughing, because literally then we have had a running joke going for ages of just like, well, I don't know, you might die today, so you better like seize the moment. And it's something about seizing the day, and like, you know, it's basically reminding yourself. So that's probably why he was given such good advice, is because it's celebrating somebody's life who's just passed. And the thing that comes back to me, which always comes back to me, which is a very simple thing that Anthony Hopkins said.
Right.
Be it now. Those three words. And I was like, that seems a bit, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, actually, it's a really good thing to say to yourself, because be is obviously like be. It means like be the center of your own world for like today, now. Like, it's not that you are going to be saying thank you for an Oscar today, or that you're on a film set today. You might just be unemployed. You might be just walking around and you might have nothing to do, or you're having to do your normal job today. But in that day, you can be the it that you can be you. Like, you can be the most authentic, best like person that you can be just today. And you might not even be feeling great, actually, and the most you can do is offer somebody a cup of tea. But there's something about that mantra of be it now, I think, is really nice, because for me sometimes that just reminds me to just keep my head up and look around and appreciate what's in front of you. I know it sounds silly.
No, I love
but
that.
But like, I really liked that, because what he was saying, it was advice to actors as well, but I thought it was good for life, because he was saying like actors are so hard on themselves, thinking they have to chase everything outside of themselves all the time. And a lot of people think that about life. And it's like not. It's like you bring things to you as well. It's in your power and in your moment to stand on your own two feet. And I liked that simple mantra. Be it now.
Well, what I love about it is the it in particular, because like it's just the ambiguity of it, in the sense of like it can be whatever that is. But I'm certainly like guilty that sometimes I'll be that version of myself later. Yeah. Like that version of myself that I want to be. It's like, I can't be that now, or you feel like I can't be that now, or you feel like that'll be too much work to be that now. So it's like, I'll be that later. Mm. But it's like, no, like if you know that thing, or like even if it's something simple, like I'm going to like be more rigorous about like doing my exercise every day, or eating that bit better, or making sure that I am like writing the amount that I need to be, you know, and just to not be like, put it off.
Exactly. But also realise that like that it's not about an end goal. So be it now takes in the whole bloody thing of like, it is literally about each day and the journey. The journey is the treasure. That's another thing I saw written on a rock somewhere, which I thought was cool. The journey is the treasure. You're not just trying to like especially like, I always think of this, like, you know, when you see young men and they are trying to carve their bodies into Adonis and they're trying to bulk themselves up or take themselves out, or they're doing all this stuff in the gym. And I don't know, like, I just personally have noticed recently that I see a lot of young lads that are really trying to get this going for themselves. And I'm like, well, some guys don't really grow into their body until they're in their late 20s or in their 30s. Like, they become much more. Like, and I was like, wow, it seems like there's a lot of young guys that are being really hard on themselves about their image. Like, and I know young women are as well. And I always think of that thing of like the be it now thing, or the like, everybody thinks they're on their journey to their ideal body, which they might well be. But really be nice to yourself on the way and realize that it's not going to happen in 2 seconds flat or a few weeks. Like, it's like, just, I don't know, just like, just be kind to yourself while you're doing that. Like, it's really good to be healthy and go to the gym or whatever you want to do to make yourself get that body, but like, don't break yourself on the way is what I'd say.
Yeah, no, and it's funny, I think, like, and it's one of them things you do have to be careful when you're talking about it, because like, you know, any kind of body issues, they are more traditionally like linked with women, like, rightly or wrongly. And I mean statistically I think it is correct, but like, there is a huge, like, as a young man who has a lot of young male friends, and like, I've really struggled with like my body and my image and my eating, and it's like, it's a huge issue for guys, and guys are so bad about talking about it, and other guys aren't very sensitive to other guys' bodies. Like, I don't know, I could be wrong, but I don't know any of my female friends who will like slag their female friends about being fat, whereas like a lot of my male friends will do that. You know what I mean? And I think that's really interesting. So I think a lot of guys are shamed into it in a way, and like, and are, as you said, are just hardening themselves. But when your external circumstances are also being hard on you, that really sharpens your own eye to yourself, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So I couldn't agree more. I just think like, it's all about everybody looking after all the different bits of the pie in themselves. Like, their physical, their emotional, their mental, like all of that. Like, and there's a lot to be said for just giving yourself the basics sometimes, reminding yourself that actually I'm going to have 8 hours sleep. Yeah. I'm just going to get up and I'm just going to have breakfast today. I'm not going to put myself under pressure to do an hour and a half workout before I even, like, because there's a lot of that. Like, I have to tell myself that sometimes. I really do. And remind yourself that you're doing exercise because you like it. Like, do it because you love it, not just to make yourself become something. I just think, like, accept where you are now. Like, it's grand. All good, like.
Yeah.
And everybody actually loves when people are completely just who they are in that moment. I don't think there's anyone, like, marking you out at 10. Like, I just think we all think that's happening. That's not happening. It's just not happening. Like, don't worry about it.
Yeah. That is a big thing to remember. Yeah, like, because sometimes you do trick yourself into thinking that everyone's thinking about me. Everyone's thinking about me.
Oh my God. Like, one of my favorite t-shirts I've ever bought says nobody cares on it.
Yeah.
I love saying that to myself. Anytime I get in a spin, anytime I get worried about something, I just go, actually, nobody cares.
No, they're thinking about themselves.
Nobody cares.
We're all thinking about ourselves, you know, nine times out of 10, you know. Right, let's give it one last spin, okay?
Okay, let's do it.
There we go. All right. Number 56. Do you have it?
No.
No worries.
Has anyone, like, no one's ever going to win this, Tom.
Well, I mean,
come on.
Someone's got 5 out of 6.
5 out of 6? Yeah, okay.
India Mullen got 5 out of 6. I think it was on episode number 2 as well. Oh, but you see, what's happened now is we get into these long chats and I get interested in something you say and I'll ask loads of follow up questions.
Oh, God. Next time, I'm going to give short, sharp answers. Okay.
Number 56. Interesting way to end, especially after Father Danjo. If you were to have a child, would you bring them up with religion?
No. Really wouldn't. Definitely, I don't plan on doing that. Sorry if anyone else thinks that I was going to bring my kids and get them to get in a communion dress. I'm not going to be doing that.
Yeah,
I'm just not going to be doing it. I have no interest in that. I have interest in empowering them to think for themselves, to have a sense of maybe, yeah, like I don't even know if I define myself as agnostic or atheist or whatever. I just really deeply believe in the potential of human beings to do things for themselves and to, like, invent, make new inventions and bring us forward in all sorts of different ways. So I suppose I do believe in the human spirit as such, as in, like, what we can achieve. And I really believe in empowering people to think clearly and feel clearly and understand who they are on a deep level as they grow older. And I think that is that's a forever journey. Like, that just keeps going and going and going. So all I'm interested in is enabling my own children to really think for themselves. And if they turn around to me and say, "Mom, I want to be a Muslim," I'm like, "All right, well, why? Like, tell me why. Like, what's your thinking behind it? You read the Quran, and okay, yeah, and what are you thinking?" You know, I would just listen to them and be open to what they want for themselves. And if they do say, "No, I just want to make my communion because everyone else in school is doing it, and I actually really want to get involved in that," I would just want to know what's in it for them behind it all. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I'm basically really open to what my kids will want for themselves. But, like, in that sense, that's why I want to have, like, kids that, like, I will literally just try and empower them to think and feel openly and be very present with whatever they're feeling, so that they then develop the skills. Basically, I'm totally of the same opinion as probably a lot of my current generation, which is very similar to what I suppose Blind Boy is saying as well, and just other people, like, I don't know, I love listening to Jarlath Regan as well, and just lots of, yeah, there's lots of female writers and stuff that I've heard in interviews and things, and I'm like, yeah, they're just more into what our kids want for themselves, because our generation is having to change so much. There's a lot of stuff that's changing at the moment, especially in Ireland. So yeah, I just think we need to be open to things that are not just based on a fixed religion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Like, I don't know, is it just a symptom of getting older or whatever, but even when I'm interacting with my parents now, or if I'm thinking back about my childhood, like, it really is through the lens of, like, if I was to have kids, what would I do and what would I do differently, and what, like, did they do so well, which is the majority of it, and, like, what are some things that, like, I think I would do that a little bit differently. You know, it's a really interesting thing, because I think, I don't know, for me certainly, you just get that perspective of, like if I, like, you know, I think my parents probably had me when they were in their, like, late 20s, which is, you know, that's only a few years off from me, right? And it's like, oh man, if I was to have a kid, like, you really are just, like, doing your best, you're making it up, you're
totally making up as you go along. I mean, my parents had me very young,
right?
So I feel like I was brought up in a very interesting background. Like, I literally grew up in a session house.
Really?
Basically, yeah. Like,
what's that look like?
What I mean is that they were in their 20s, so they would have, like, little house parties and we'd be upstairs asleep. So, but I was used to sleeping with, like, music on or action around me, and I grew up on a council estate and I had the best childhood ever. And I was out running around and playing games and just always really involved in the day with other kids, you know. And if I could give anything to my kids, actually, it would be a bit of that. It's like, there's a lot of... I get so upset about the housing crisis because of really strange reasons. I think of it in terms of the childhoods that are being had at the moment. And that there's a feeling of, like, that they're not, like, just there's a lot of kids that are going, oh, like, I'm in this, in their perspective, you have to think, like, they're only in the world a few years. So they see the world as, like, okay, so I go to school and then Mom brings me to a hotel room. We have to stay in a hotel room because there's no houses, but we had a house, but that's not there anymore. But it's because something to do with the, there's not enough houses, but we're not in a poor country. I don't understand. And like, so like their childhood mentality and where they get to play. Like some of them only have a car park to play in, or they're not allowed to play in certain areas of the hotel. But there's all these different things that I think like, that depresses me, not depresses me, but fires me up and makes me go, okay, guys, there's definitely a way we can do all of this better. And if anything, like that highlights to me the kind of childhood I want my child to have. Like I want them to feel they are allowed to have space in the world to play mm-hmm. and learn and grow and feel the freedom of having, and also having connection to other kids from different backgrounds and all sorts. And I think that's really vital. And I think this housing crisis that we're calling it, I'm putting in inverted commas because I was at a panel discussion recently with some architects and planning people in Ireland. And it was funny because I was literally thinking the same thing. I was working for Peter McVeary Trust that day. And basically, we have to start thinking about the long-term solutions to this now. Like I'm going to walk now and be at the protest, the march that's happening today. And that's fine. And that is necessary to rally and have a rallying cry. But if anything, like last week when I was there building a timber frame house within days with a bunch of people and learning all about passive housing, which is like houses with like basically no carbon footprint mm-hmm. and how we can build very cheaply and very easily and very quickly. Not only can we build amazing houses very cheaply and economically and all that kind of thing and quickly, but they can actually benefit the environment. Like I really want, like if anyone is listening to this that could ever like send a message to Housing Minister Owen, it's like, can we please use the opportunity whenever they finally get it together to build some houses? Can we use it as an opportunity to do it with an environmental like thoughts behind it? Because I really think like that could be the making of us. We could use this crisis as like, as that saying is, every crisis is an opportunity mm-hmm. in disguise. And I really do think this is an opportunity in disguise, because there are actually loads of people in the background that I have met in research for my film that have all the solutions are there. All the solutions are there. Like it's just, there's just this massive, it's like a mirage in front of us right now that we think we can't sort this out. And it's so easy, like. Mm. And I'm on the verge of, I'm literally, if I had the money, I would literally just buy a patch of land somewhere and just start building something like within weeks, because I'm just so bored of it. Like I'm just a bit bored. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I think loads of us are. And I think I am tempted as much as you. I literally had a phone call with somebody like last week because I was thinking about moving away. And definitely half the reason I want to move away is because, well, I don't know. I'm just, this buzz of the housing crisis and me being an artist and trying to survive here, I'm just kind of like, meh. I'm starting to think about going away again. But I don't want to do that just out of fear or weakness. I mm-hmm. want to make sure I've faced the issue head on for myself as well. Because I do think there's something positive to come of all this. I just, it's a matter of getting all the right people linked together and just talking, and then get hold of the land and the buildings that are just sitting there. There is my big soapbox rant.
And I think it's the perfect way to end, because it was actually very articulate and very, very
thank
gorgeous.
You.
And Claire Dunn, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you. Thanks for asking me in.
It was great. Thanks for playing Personality Bingo.
All right.
So guys, that was the brilliant Claire Dunn playing Personality Bingo with Tom Moran. Claire, if you are listening, a massive thank you to you for taking the time to do it. I really appreciate your time. It was a genuine pleasure to sit down and talk to you. Guys, as I said, loads of good stuff going on with the podcast. We're going to have brilliant episodes coming up. We're getting very close to episode 100. I don't know what we're on exactly, but I mean, we are well into the 90s, which is absolutely berserk. But look, we're going to keep playing them out for you for the time being. And please keep enjoying them. If you are enjoying them, as always, please do share it with a friend. friend, give us a tweet, give us a Facebook message, whatever it is that you want to do. Any way you can get it out there to your mates, it's the best way to do it. People have been real kind about sticking their heads up and letting us know they're listening. As I said, it always just makes a difference, and it's lovely for the guests to know that, I don't know, they're being listened to and they didn't give up their time for nothing. And there are loads of you out there that listen to this every week. I see ye pop up on my computer screen, so a massive thank you to you for doing that. And as always, a huge thank you to the boss woman, the brilliant Erin Lindsay, for mixing, editing and producing this podcast, to Alan and Paddy for having us aboard the Head Stuff Podcast Network, to the brilliant Connor Dunn for his gorgeous artwork, and to the beautiful Leah Moore and Anthony Manley for their equally beautiful theme music. Guys, thanks for listening. Tune in next week for another episode of Personality Bingo with Tom Moran.